I'm Manny.
We're actually recording this episode on Christmas, so on the road, not in the normal studio. I apologize. The sound quality is probably going to be not quite as good as what you're used to, but don't have all the normal equipment. The plus side is Manny and I are actually in the same room, so
that's right.
Kind of weird, but good times for sure. So
that's how we started.
This episode is DC books for December, January 21st. So we're going to go through, we're going to talk about the books, give our opinions, and let us know what you think. So let's get started with Aquaman number 13, The Deluge, continuing that story arc. The writer is Dan Abnett, pencils by Scott Eaton, inks by Wayne Faulker, and colors by Gabe Eltap. So this is continuing the story of The Deluge. This is actually part two. And The Deluge is pretty much the storyline where Nemo, led by Black Manta, has, I guess you could say, they've kind of come out of hiding in a way. They're impersonating the United States Navy and attacking the United States. And so what happens is the U.S. thinks Atlantis is attacking them, and they retaliate. And to make sure that that doesn't go well and these two nations end up at each other's throats, then Nemo actually impersonates U.S. naval vessels to attack Atlantis. They basically want each side to believe that the other is fully committed to this war, and it's not going well. In this issue, Aquaman is confronted, well, actually it was at the end of last issue, Aquaman was confronted by his teammates in the Justice League. This issue, he shows them the evidence he has. It's not 100% complete, it's not 100% proof, but it's compelling enough, and the Justice League trust Aquaman and believe him, and they take that evidence to the United States government. Unfortunately, the government doesn't believe them. They think the Justice League is just covering for one of their own. And it looks like the government is going to do whatever means necessary to take out Aquaman because they believe that this will end the war. So this is more of the same from writer Dan Abnett, and that's a good thing. Aquaman's been a political book all along, and this is the story that he's been crafting right from the beginning. It's a very political story, a story that's very appropriate when we look at the world we live in today. And it's also kind of a unique and interesting story on Aquaman, because it really focuses on his role as a leader of a nation, more so than just like a guy who has these superpowers. It's really exploring this deeper level and the fact that he is a king, and there is an air about him. There is this sense of he's a very regal character. He has to put the needs of all his people above his own needs. Very self-sacrificing. It's what any good leader would do. So, very good issue. Aquaman has been a really solid title right from the beginning. The pencils by Scott Eaton are okay. You know, I've said it 100 times. I prefer Brad Walker on the book. Walker does all the covers, and he gets to do about one full issue every 3 or 4 issues, which is less than he would like. But he's very particular. He's very professional. He wants to show his best work, so he's going to take his time and make sure it's done right, and he's not going to cut any corners in hopes of putting out more books. He's definitely a quality over quantity guy, so I definitely can respect that. But the art here is done well by Scott Eaton with inks by Wayne Faulker. Of course, Gabe Eltap has been on the covers the entire time, colors I should say, the entire time, and it's a very primary palette for Aquaman, has been the whole time. But I can't find any fault with the colors, especially the underwater scenes. I've talked about it before. Eltab gives the whole image, the whole picture of the book, the right hues, the right kind of tones. Anything that's underwater is a little muted compared to the scenes that are on the surface, or like the subs, for example. Everything has that reddish hue that you would expect with the emergency lighting on. So really, really well done colors. Beautiful book. Very good story. Seems like the action's about to really ramp up here. So I really, really enjoyed this issue. What did you think, Manny?
Well, I enjoyed it as well. Aquaman is definitely a different type of book than some of the other heroes that we encounter every week. I mean, you pointed on it a little bit regarding his statue as the leader of a nation, not just a hero. It's not like he can use his superpowers or his abilities to solve every issue. He actually has to take the time to really think of the consequences of his actions. Anything he does or says can really tip the balance in one favor to Atlantis to the rest of the world, who obviously this from the beginning of the book, like we've seen, they're just trying to create a bridge, and there's always going to be the Black Manta and certain organizations that are going to try to impose their will and stop that from happening. So for what it is, I really enjoy it. It's definitely, I can see how it may not be a lot of readers' cup of tea, just because it doesn't necessarily have the same type of action as other books, but we definitely get to see how a leader needs to function. It doesn't matter if superpowers or not, you're responsible for the lives of millions, whether it's your kingdom or in this case the United States, who at this point now they've even implicated the Justice League because of false accusations. So very good book, really really vibrant colors. It's really nice to look at. I just kind of wish they would cut out that that section with Mira and the I don't know what they are, the oracles or whatever. That part, it seemed a little bit unnecessary. I'd prefer to just see her by his side instead of really making it a big deal that she's different.
She could be the Fatal Queen.
Yeah, really.
All right. Well, next up we have Batman number 13, written by Tom King, pencils and inks by Mikhail Yanin, and colors by Jun Chung. This is the final piece of the I Am Suicide arc. And being that it was the final piece, it almost felt anticlimactic to me. Just based on what we saw, it kind of played out as I expected. It turns out Catwoman didn't really betray Batman. It was just part of the plan the whole time. So we basically see Batman's pieces all fall together. He's able to defeat Bane, which, again, no surprise, Bane off of Venom is really not a match for Batman, and I wouldn't expect him to be. You know, as much as he's trained, as much as he thinks he's a match for Batman, it's Batman, and you're just Bane without any superpowers or really any kind of advantage or any way to help yourself. So, not a surprise. I did like the way that it ended. We see that Batman has really got under Bane's skin by defeating him, and he's going to go back on the Venom. So when you think about how much Bane struggled and how awful it was for him, the withdrawal, I mean, most people don't survive getting off of Venom. It ends up killing him, the need. And being that Bane was able to survive because he's such a mean son of a gun, basically, that meant something. And so we see that Batman must have really got under his skin if he's going to get back on the Venom and he wants his revenge against Batman. Honestly, if I'm Bane at this point, maybe just leave well enough alone. How many times do you have to get your ass kicked by Batman before you're just like, all right, maybe I should just, like, he left me alive. Maybe that's enough. You know, I don't ever want to see Batman again, you know what I mean? And clearly he's going to go looking for him.
Because he left him on his island.
Yeah, he rules this island. He's completely safe there. Just, you know, give it up. Just accept that Batman is your, you know, your nemesis. And Batman even tells him, you know, all you have to do is remember, you're brave and you're happy. You know, stay on your island where you're a king. So you don't have to do it. You can stay safe. I mean, he's basically telling him.
Yeah, it's all true.
In the coming days, you'll be tempted to leave the comfort of your home to seek out a monster, that monster being Batman. But listen to me, before you get yourself hurt, you don't have to do it. What does Bane do? Venom. Need Venom. Yeah, Bane clearly is not the sharpest knife in the drawer to go after Batman. So, a bit of an anticlimactic ending, as I said, but it does set up the return of the Bane as we first saw him, you know, totally yoked out on Venom. It'll be interesting to see what Tom King does as far as if he adds any extra in there, any kind of new wrinkle to Venom. You know, it could affect him differently now. He's been off it for a while. I expect Tom King to do something interesting, something unique. It's not just going to be a return of the same old muscle-bound Bane. The art in this issue by Mikhail Yanin. Man, I love this guy's art. That title page, just seeing the shadows that he puts on Bane's face, on the Psycho Pirate's face, the expression on Catwoman's face, I mean, masterfully done. It almost looks like a photograph of the Psycho Pirate. So well done. So yeah, the art is done well. I love the big cinematic scenes in the Batcave with Amanda Waller and Pennyworth. I really don't like Amanda Waller, I have to say. I didn't mind her the first time around in the classic Suicide Squad, but ever since the New 52, I haven't cared for her. And I mean, she's not a character you're supposed to really like. You know, you're supposed to dislike her, and I certainly do. She makes it seem, as she's talking to Pennyworth, that the whole entire thing was set up by her just to get into the Batcave. From Gotham being killed because of the dealings with... I mean, when you look... This is issue 13 of Batman, and when you look at it, Amanda Waller has been part of this book from issue 1.
Yeah.
Right from the start, you had Hugo Strange and Psycho Pirate in Gotham City causing problems that all eventually led to the death of Gotham and Gotham Girl's parents, which led to Gotham losing control, which led to Gotham Girl having to come and save the day on Night of the Monster Men into this I Am Suicide Squad art. So she's been there the whole time. And it seems like everything that's happened has been leading to this moment to get her into the Batcave to get, you know, the information she wants to get. So how she got into the Batcave, I wish I knew, because she's still just kind of an overweight, chubby black woman at the end of the day. Don't get me wrong, she has a mind like a steel trap, and she's extremely formidable, but from a purely physical standpoint, she's kind of weak, you know what I mean? So it'd be interesting to know. I doubt that that's ever an aspect of the story that'll be covered, but I really hope in the end she really gets what's coming to her. You know, it's not like Batman's going to beat her up or anything, but I hope she really gets kind of put in her place. I certainly know that it's not like they're going to end the Suicide Squad or whatever, but I guess when I say I want her to get what's coming to her, I just want her to be put in her place by Batman so that she knows she can never screw with Batman again.
Yeah.
You know? In the same way that Bane is going to learn that lesson in the next arc, he's going to take Venom, he's going to try to return to Gotham City, he's going to try to go up against Batman, he's going to get his butt kicked, and maybe at that point he'll finally learn, hey, I'm going to stay safe on my island. At the end of the Justice League versus Suicide Squad, which is a book we're going to talk about issue one in a little bit, everything that happens there with Justice League going against Suicide Squad, only one, it's, you know, who's going to be the winners? Who's going to be the losers? I mean, you kind of know at the end of the day it's going to end up right where they started, sort of, because DC is not going to cancel Justice League and they're not going to cancel Suicide Squad. So you kind of know its status quo is going to be maintained at some point to a certain extent. But I would like it if Amanda Waller knows, man, I was lucky to get out of this alive without, you know, getting killed or getting killed, like, career-wise and having the Suicide Squad program taken away from me. So maybe I should leave well enough alone, because she shouldn't be in the same class with Batman and Superman and those kind of people. I mean, and she's not a hero by any stretch of the imagination. So I really hope she gets what's coming to her. And I guess it's just a wait and see at this point. Other than that, glad to know Catwoman didn't betray Batman. But again, I kind of knew that all along. And I do wonder if there's going to be any consequences for the other villains, I should say, that Batman recruited. So where does the ventriloquist go from here? Punch and Julie, what happens to them? And Bronze Tiger really didn't... He only had, like, one scene in the entire book. So he's always a been an interesting character that I've enjoyed in the past, so I wouldn't mind seeing more of him. What are your thoughts on Batman 13, being the big Batman fan that you are?
Like you, it was really, really anticlimactic. Just because you know that Batman knew he plans everything so well, contingency plans and whatnot. And there was no way that, you know, that all of it could have gone wrong so fast. So it's definitely a little bit of a letdown. And but I will say, how many times in the history of Batman has he gotten away in a bubblegum boat?
That's true.
Because they ride off in a bubblegum raft. And I thought that was pretty funny. And I was more surprised, actually, at the kiss between Catwoman and Batman at the end than anything else. Because usually they kind of... There's always been, you know, some sort of relationship there, but I've never seen it that far open. I was a little disappointed overall in the characterization of Bane, because I thought Tom King was gonna do a little bit more with him as a ruler of an island. In the beginning, I kind of had that little bit more respect for him when he was first introduced. And by the end of it, when he's asking for Venom, he's kind of reverted back to the brute that we know him as from so many different variations of the character. And to touch your point on Amanda Waller, oh my god, I was just talking to this point with somebody that I need her to either be number one collected by that guy who has Red Robin and Doomsday, or number two, killed off for a while, because I am all, kind of as well as you. I'm kind of really getting tired of her being involved in everything, because she's kind of more like an annoying fly than anything else. Because at any point in time, I feel that Batman could shut her down. I don't think that she's like you, that she's even on the same level as most of the other heroes. She's a government pawn, because we've seen it in the New 52 where they took her position away, and that didn't go very well with her, at least. So overall, I'm actually really happy to. I want to see where Tom King takes Bane now, and also explore a little bit more of the relationship between Batman and Catwoman. Rebirth has definitely been. Also a rebirth for relationships: Black Canary, Green Arrow, Batman, Catwoman, Aquaman, Mira, and a few others. Lois and Clark, they're really focusing on families and relationships, something that they were really shying away from in the New 52. And so with that, it's okay. The one thing that kind of also surprised me is their method of using the ventriloquist with the Psycho Pirate, kind of his split personality, helping him avoid his mental tricks, his emotional tricks, and with that, that was pretty cool, that he doesn't even need to actually have the puppet. He can just kind of form it in his own hand, and with that, you also see that, yeah, he's kind of delusional anyway. Beautiful book to look at. Love the coloring, especially in that I guess you can call it a throne room where Bane sits. I like the colors, the almost goldish oranges hues that they use. And I'm just trying to figure out why he's naked though. That kind of,
God only knows.
That's kind of strange. But yeah, it was okay. But I kind of want Batman to move on to bigger, better things. Stop dealing with Amanda Waller. But you know, we know from previews that he's going to be leading a team, and then also he's going to still be developing his relationship with Catwoman. So we'll see what happens going forward. Not my favorite book in the DC universe right now, but manageable.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on Bane. In a way, it's almost comical, that last panel, Venom. I go back to when Revenge of the Sith came out, you know, episode 3, and how, you know, Darth Vader's supposed to be this menacing villain, and we're seeing the origin of him.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that scene that ended up, you know, becoming basically a punchline with him saying, no! And it's the scene that launched 1,000 memes, right? And that's how I hear Bane in my mind, that same kind of scene. Venom! And it's like, you know, just, you're a joke, dude. You're a joke. Stay on your island. You're not in Batman's league. Move on. All right, up next we have Cyborg number 7, written by John Semper Jr. Pencils in this issue are by Paul Pelletier. Inks by Tony Cordas. And colors by Guy Major. So we saw kind of a cliffhanger ending with Variant, female Cyborg, at the end of the last issue. It kind of makes sense what happens here. Basically, Cyborg didn't trust her right from the start. Basically, as much as it seemed like he did last issue, he trusted his friends at Star Labs more, and when one of them mentioned something to him, he took precautions. So we get a little bit of mustache twirling. I'm going to forgive that. It wasn't terrible, and it certainly wasn't the worst kind of two-dimensional villain I've seen. But, you know, John Semper Jr. comes from the world of animation, from doing cartoons. So those are much simpler characters, especially the villains in those kind of stories. So I'm going to forgive a little mustache twirling here. A little Bond villain action with him kind of explaining his whole entire plan. And then when it comes down to it, Cyborg shuts Variant down, and it turns out this evil would-be ruler was depending on Variant and the skills she was going to acquire from Cyborg much more than maybe he should have. Because all it takes is Cyborg shutting down Variant to pretty much unravel all the plans. I was happy to see that the villain is revealed. And when I say villain, I mean not the mustache-twirling surface villain that Cyborg defeats pretty handily in this issue, but who's ever behind the more important plot, the person that kidnapped Fixstone's father, the one that's been impersonating his father ever since. We've kind of come to the point where that stands revealed, and the story that's been playing out overall in the title since it started is finally going to get some traction. Now that Cyborg knows that the person he thought was his father is not his father, I expect to see movement there. I don't think Vic is going to kind of sit idly by knowing his father is in prison somewhere. So I expect that plot to start wrapping up maybe in the next issue or two. I also know that we haven't seen the last of Variant. It kind of sucks what they do to her, this issue, you know, at the middle to end of this issue. They say, well, she's a traitor. We're just going to shut her down. And Vic even argues, as much as he knows what she did was wrong, he argues that she's, you know, she's still a sentient life form. Can you just shut her down? And that's kind of almost a foreshadowing of what happens to Cyborg himself at the end of the issue. So looking forward to the next couple issues, as I said, to really wrap up what's been going on in the title since the beginning, and also to find out, I mean, we know who the villains are as far as, you know, we see them on the page, but we don't really know who they are mm-hmm. or what their motivations are at this point. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next. And it will also be interesting to see, after this initial arc is over, where is John Semper Jr. going to go from here? Because everything he's been doing has been leading up to this final confrontation so far. So now that this one big idea is going to be out of the way, where does he go next? That's what I'm interested in seeing. And of course, the Paul Pelletier art is done exceptionally well. I'm also going to give a big shout out to Guy Major. Lot of special effects with the colors in this issue. A lot of lightning, a lot of glowing effects from both Cyborg and Variant. They're all handled extremely well. And then at the end, when Variant is sending out all the troops, there's like these teleportation small boom tube teleport gates. Again, the colors are handled very well on those, and you know, the lightning, the water, everything is done really, really well. And then at the end, when Cyborg's real villain stands revealed, the colors there are very striking as well. So a really great job by Guy Major. You know, it's one of those things that often gets overlooked. When coloring is done really, really well, it just, it makes the story flow, and it gives you a sense of mood and really enhances the story, but it's not something you necessarily notice unless you're looking for it. But if it's done poorly, then you notice it right away because it pulls you out of the story. So I want to make sure that Guy Major gets his due in this issue, because he did a great job. What were your thoughts on Cyborg 7?
I was a little disappointed. I found that the whole plot twist that Variant was working with that other guy, and that they planned the whole time that she was going to be used for the Cyborg program to be kind of very, very...
coincidental?
Yeah, it almost felt like, you know the Civil War movie where he had planned everything out so well, that the arguments and whatnot and this and that, and I mean, everything had to go fall through a dot. Because, I mean, in theory, so she also planned to blow herself up.
Yeah, what if she just had died?
I mean, you're more likely to die than anything else, or be, you know, well enough to recover. So, I mean, you have like a 0.0001 maybe chance for this working out. And I mean, it did. Look at that. It worked out so well.
Yeah, I did have that thought when I was reading it too, and I guess I just kind of chose to overlook it, because I was like, well, that's pretty far-fetched plan. It really kind of worked out for you there, but
and then it was like, and I used you too, and it was like, what? It's just really coincidental, and then it turns really, really cliche, and so she, you know, Cyborg was like, oh, I knew something like this could happen, so I installed a bug. So I just kind of kept rolling my eyes throughout the book, because it's things that you see in stories over and over again. Even to the fault at the end where Cyborg confronts his, I guess you can call him Cyborg dad, and he turns him off. I was like, wow, I've seen this in RoboCop many times, and of course we know what's gonna happen. His soul part of him in the next issue will take over and will wake up, and then, you know, it'll leave him wondering how he's able to get past the machine part of his body. And then, of course, what have we been talking about the last few issues other than Cyborg as a person and as a machine? And it's gonna wrap it all up nicely on how Cyborg is a person. And so really, after reading this, like you, I'm kind of like, all right, so what happens next? Because we've done the whole Cyborg machine person storyline. Now where are we going? Because that will be interesting, because Cyborg's a little bit of a difficult character to write just because of that. Not much to him. I personally feel that he should still be with the Titans, at least. I think he's a way better fit as a supporting character than actually as a lead. But since the New 52, you know, they've wanted to have him there. So overall, a decent book. Not my favorite of the week. Not terrible. Not great. Lots of detail in a panel to panel to look at. You know, it kind of sucks when you have to draw a Cyborg, because he has so many parts to him, and now you have his like cyber dad, who you also have to do half machine, half man, and Variant, and boom tubes, and man, that's a lot of work. I know that, you know, this is artist's passion to do things like this, but I still pity them for having to put in that much work in every one of these panels. And for that reason, it's another reason why I never would ever, no matter how much I dislike the artwork, you know, criticize an artist for all the time and effort that they put in these books. So, decent book. Just wish it was a little bit less cliche.
All right, up next we have Green Arrow number 13, written by Benjamin Percy with art by Otto Schmidt. First of all, I'll say the cover was really cool looking. And this is continuing the story of Green Arrow attempting to clear his name, attempting to clean up the streets of Seattle, be socially conscious and socially responsible. But the powers that be, the remnants of the Ninth Circle, don't want that to happen. There's someone going around, another archer, impersonating Green Arrow, attempting to make him look bad. It makes sense when you think about it, but again, much like the Cyborg issue we were just talking about, just a little bit of a cliche there, with the cop nodding, being on probation, and, you know, it just looked kind of like, oh, so we got a bad cop, we got a villain impersonating a hero, we got this vice squad, you know, probably more bad cops. You got Green Arrow, this is probably the biggest problem I had with the story. You have Green Arrow, who should know better. Once they figure out who the next target's going to be, the last thing that should happen is Green Arrow should go anywhere near him. Send Diggle, send Black Canary, make sure Green Arrow stays as far away from that guy as possible, and in fact, he should go somewhere where he can be seen and help establish establish an alibi. Instead, because the victim's supposedly the Russell Wilson,
Colin Kaepernick.
The quarterback, Nathan, or not Nathan Donnelly, what's his name? His name's Samson.
Let's be honest, right. He looks a lot like Colin Kaepernick.
Cy Samson, Hawks quarterback. Not Seahawks, but Hawks quarterback. So, I don't know, I think he looks like... He looks quite a bit like Russell Wilson. I mean, I see what you're saying.
He looks like Colin Kaepernick.
He looks like Russell Wilson.
I'm going to pull up a picture now.
He's Hawks quarterback, and he's in Seattle. The dude is Russell Wilson.
That looks ridiculously like Colin Kaepernick.
Regardless, he's the quarterback for the Seattle team.
I'm sure they did that Russell on purpose.
Wilson. He's Russell Wilson.
No, I think he wanted to kill off Colin Kaepernick.
Why would he want to kill off Colin Kaepernick?
Because he's not going to kill off Russell Wilson.
Well, Green Arrow's not going to kill off any quarterback because Green Arrow's not the one doing it.
Okay, here, look, put it back, and then I have this picture here that's pretty close.
Yeah, but I'm sure I can find a picture of I'm sure I can find a picture of Russell Wilson that looks similar to that. I mean, Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson look similar.
Yeah, but Russell Wilson never has a beard, though.
Or a mustache. What are you talking about? Russell Wilson has a beard all the time. He has a beard right now.
Does he really?
Yeah. Look it up.
It looks clean-shaven here.
Yeah. Anyway, the last thing Green Arrow should be doing is going anywhere near the Seattle football game. And instead, he goes to Queen Industries Field to attempt to prevent Russell Wilson / Colin Kaepernick / Cy Samson from getting hurt. And oh, lo and behold, what happens?
Oh, you know what? I think you're right. I'd never even noticed that. I don't watch bad football, that's why.
See? So, Samson gets hurt. Green Arrow's there. Doesn't stop it from happening. The other guy takes off. Now Green Arrow looks like he's going to take the ball. Again, you know, a story we've seen play out 1,000 times. Would have been nice to just have a hero not be ridiculous and make the boneheaded move of in trying to go and clear his name, make things worse for himself. So, I mean, Green Arrow's been in the top two of DC Rebirth books for me the entire time. This has been the worst issue. The art by Alan Schmidt was fine. I had no problem with that. I had no problem with the characterization between Green Arrow and Black Canary. But this storyline itself, the way it's... I didn't necessarily have a problem with it to begin with, but the way it played out this issue with Green Arrow making the boneheaded move to go and try to protect the person that he's... knows is going to be the target of this of the person that's trying to ruin his reputation, it just didn't sit well. It just was so dumb. I didn't care for it. It's kind of weird. I'm going to sound a little hypocritical here because I praised Aquaman for being political. And this was a very political issue of this with a kind of a Trump-lite kind of character in Nathan Domini or Domini, whatever you want to call it. But I don't know. Maybe it's just the fact that I there's enough of that garbage with the alt-right and the liberals and the conservatives and just all that stuff, all that politics stuff that I really couldn't care less about. I get enough of that in real life. I don't really need it in my comics too, you know? I'd like my comics to be an escape. And so, you know, seeing this guy talk about politics in the book, and I understand that that's kind of what Green Arrow in his heyday, what he did, you know? He was a political figure. He was, to some extent, kind of a socialist warrior fighting for the little guy. So I kind of get that, and I'm okay with that, but this was just a little bit over the line for me, just pushing it all a little too far. I want to read comics and escape reality, not have the ills of the world and the political arena that's going on right now in the United States kind of thrown at me through the issue, through the pages of a comic. So, like I said, the art by Otto Schmidt, I don't care for his art as much as Juan Ferreira's, but the art is really, really solid. I love his sense of storytelling. It's very cinematic. He's always paying attention to the little details. Like if you look at the page where Black Canary goes to search the evidence room, again, the panels tell a story. It's very well done, and it's told simply in three panels. But if you notice, the background on that page is also Black Canary standing at the desk, and you can kind of see the way she's standing. You see the flirtatious aspect as she goes to take advantage of the sergeant there that's in charge of the evidence. So little details like that that make the difference for me. What are your thoughts on Green Arrow 13?
I'm going to have to agree with you. Probably the weakest issue of Green Arrow that I've read. And I really enjoyed this book from the moment that I finally was able to catch up on it. The relationship between Black Canary and Green Arrow is probably the thing that's highlighted the most to me in this issue. Just because I found the rest of it, like you, kind of... I've seen it already a bunch of times. And I've seen it also on the TV show. So I kind of wish they went a different direction. But, I mean, who knows where it can lead. They've done such a great job. They have a great track record so far that they're allowed to have a bad issue every now and then. Not too many, though. But we'll see where it goes in the next issue. And if it continues like that, that's when maybe I'll start having a little bit more of a problem. But with that, it was still really, really... nice to look at. It'd be nice to get a commission from Otto Schmidt of like a Black Canary or a Green Arrow. I really like the way he draws them. So that's really all I have to say about this issue, because there's not much in it that you've already haven't covered that I really feel like I need to touch on.
So they had an episode or a story arc in the TV show with somebody who was pretending to be Green Arrow going around shooting people.
Yeah, they did it this season when it was starting off. Somebody was killing off people again.
And he made the same mistake, like, oh, I'm going to go and... This is who his target is. I'm going to go and try to save him, and then it ends up making him look even worse.
Not necessarily. They kind of cleared it up, I think. Stories went a bunch of different directions. But the same thing with the arrows and whatnot. Yeah. It's very, very similar.
Yeah, it's been there, done that. All right, next we have Green Lanterns 13, written by Sam Humphries, art by a new artist, one I wasn't familiar with, but I thought the art was very well done. His name is Ronan Cliquet, and then colors are by Blonde. So what did you think of Green Lantern 13?
Green Lantern 13 was quite interesting. Really gave us a look at the first Green Lantern, Volthoom, and the reason why... you know, what happened to him, why it happened, the fact that also the Phantom Ring, the issue with that ring and why nobody should have worn it, it makes sense. I like the explanation of it. I mean, there's no battery for it, no control, and because of that now... the wielder of the Phantom Ring really has the danger of becoming a bomb, because at least with the other lanterns, they have a way to wield the power, a power source somewhere to store the energy. When the emotion of fear is displayed, we know that it gets absorbed by that particular lantern or willpower, and then in turn it's given back to the lanterns in a powerful form. But when it comes to the Phantom Lantern, there's no lantern for it. There's no source for it other than the wielder's body. So you're gonna have all these emotions, and especially with the Phantom Ring, what makes it even more dangerous is that it's all the emotions. It's not just a couple of them. It's not one of them specifically. It's all the emotions. So it makes him in turn very, very dangerous. I thought that made the issue very interesting, and I really enjoy the art, and I look forward to see how this finishes up, because I think probably what they're gonna have to do is get him off Earth or something, or figure out a way to get the ring off. But I think it might be a little too late for that.
Yeah, I thought this was a really good issue too. You know, we had seen Valthoon before, and not really knowing why he turned evil or why he turned against the Guardians. We get a little more of his backstory here. It starts to make more sense. One thing I like that Sam Humphries is doing is, I don't know how much he's collaborating or talking to Robert Venditti, who's writing the Hal Jordan Green Lanterns book right now, but the characterization and the overall impression we get of the Guardians is very consistent mm-hmm. with what we've seen from the end of the Geoff Johns era through the Venditti era into Rebirth as kind of being out of touch. I mean, it used to be when the Guardians were first introduced, they were these benevolent elders of the universe that had everyone's best interest at heart, and now in these stories these writers have been telling, we've seen them make mistake after mistake.
Oh yeah,
mainly due to arrogance on their part, them thinking that they know better and being really out of touch with reality, even to the point of Robert Venditti kind of turning them into villains. And so what Humphries does here in fleshing out the backstory of Balthoom a little more, and you really do get the sense that the Guardians are in the wrong, and Valthoon really got the short end of the stick. It doesn't come to the point where you feel sympathy for the guy, but you can kind of understand maybe why he did what he did. As far as the Phantom Ring goes, very interesting. You know, I don't expect... It appears that the human that was reading it, Frank Lemansky, doesn't survive the end of this issue. Are we going to see a new wielder of the Phantom Ring? Is the Phantom Ring going to go away for a while? That's something that I'm interested in seeing. It would be interesting to see it go into the hands of like maybe Kyle Rayner, for example, a White Lantern, and see him struggle to maybe control it. That could be an interesting story. If it went in the hands of a new character who struggled to control it, that could be interesting as well. There's a lot of possibilities there. I hope that we haven't seen the last. I mean, sure we haven't, but I hope even at the end of this story arc that we haven't seen the last of the ring. The art by Ronan Cliquet, as I said, newcomer, not familiar with the name. Thought he did a pretty good job. I also love the fact that Jessica and Simon had to kind of confront their own fears mm-hmm. At the beginning of the issue in order to even get past them to face off against the Phantom Lantern. So that was really cool as well. So very interested to see where it goes from here. Humphries is definitely making sure that this Green Lantern book is tied tightly into the overall mythos of the Green Lantern corner of the DC Universe, even though these two lanterns are pretty much based on Earth. We haven't seen them anywhere but Earth so far in the first 13 issues. So yeah, very enjoyable issue. I had said I was out on Green Lantern at one point, and I said it last after we reviewed issue 12. I'm really glad I stuck with it. Book has been lights out, no pun intended, for just about every issue since issue 5, I'll say. Okay, then up next we have Justice League versus Suicide Squad number 1, written by Joshua Williamson, art by some guy named Jason Fabok.
I've never heard of him.
And colors by Alex Sinclair. This book was outstanding. Really, really cool. It's a big event going on. It's kind of weird. I mean, it's the first issue coming out in late December, and it's weekly, right?
Yeah.
So this is basically going to play out in January, in the month of January. Not exactly a prime time for comic publishers to do events, so it's kind of neat that it's going to play out. Usually January is a very slow time. This is an exciting book for me, being that it's so closely tied into what's going on. We talked about the I Am Suicide Squad arc that ties into this in Batman 13. We know that Justice League America is coming. We know that that's going to involve Batman. It's going to involve Killer Frost. It's going to involve Lobo. Some of these other characters that we see in this issue. So it's very interesting how much this Justice League versus Suicide Squad is tying into the immediate future of the DC Universe. And it's also about time, in a way, for this book, because as much as I've liked Suicide Squad and its different iterations in the past, you always kind of wonder, and you've got to think, man, don't the heroes notice that these villains are catching or yeah. right back out on the streets? They got to know something's going on. And then in the classic John Ostrander run in issue 10, where Batman went himself as Matches Malone, got transferred to Bell Rev, broke out of his cell, found all the evidence, and then was waylaid by Amanda Waller, basically saying, I know what your secret identity is, and if you expose the Suicide Squad, I'm going to expose you. And Batman backs off. And I was okay with that at the time, but you got to know that at some point in time after that, some way, Batman's going to get somebody else to do it so Batman could have plausible deniability. He would not just let it go and mm-hmm. let the Suicide Squad continue to exist. That's against everything he stands for. So in that way, it's about time that something like this happened. The Justice League is like, hey, this can't keep going on. Amanda Waller can't keep doing this. What happens next? And all that being said, there's a lot of characters like Deadshot, like Harley Quinn to some extent, who really, in a way, are trying to do the right thing. So for that reason, I kind of think of them as not complete villains. And so are they going to deserve what they're going to get? And that's not even to mention the villains we see break out at the beginning of the issue from this catacombs facility. And then we get the reveal at the end of who exactly they are. These are some powerful, powerful villains. Some were seen for the first time. The Emerald Empress is from the future. She's from the pages of Legions of Superheroes. And they're not even around in the pages of any DC comic right now. So what does that mean exactly? And compared to the power level of most heroes nowadays, she's way above, right? Same goes for Lobo. I mean, this is a cosmic level powered villain. Not familiar with Johnny Sorrow, not familiar with Rustum. I think they're new. But just based on seeing Emerald Empress, Lobo, Dr. Polaris is another one who's very powerful. The other two, which seem to be very intriguing, I can't wait to learn more. And the fact that Maxwell Lord, who the last time we saw him, he was having his neck snapped by Wonder Woman, is the one that broke him out and is leading this whole thing. Completely in. I can't wait to see what happens. I can't wait to see how it all ties together, how this series leads into Suicide Squad going forward, how it leads into the Justice League America title going forward, how Batman ends up leading some of these heroes. What's the deal with Emerald Empress being back in the past? What's the deal with Dr. Polaris? I can't wait. And the Jason Fabok art, I'm not as big of a fan of his art as you are, but I do love his sense of drama. I love the way that he sets up the reveal of the final villains on those last pages, how it's seeing one piece of this character, one piece of that character. When I was reading it, I saw that green eye, that emerald eye, and I was like, wait, Emerald Empress? She's going to show up in this? She's from the 30th century. How the heck is that going to work out? So very high-quality art from Fabok, much as I expected. And really, really, really enjoyed this issue. I'm sure you have quite a bit to say, Manny.
No, just to look at this issue was a pleasure. I don't even know what it's about. I was just looking through all the panels.
No, I'm just kidding. Jason Fabok art, obviously awesome. Let's talk about that spread where the Justice League characters are once again going to, well, not once again, are finally going up against the Suicide Squad. I mean, look at all the detail in that Deadshot. You know, I know you gotta love that with him is firing forward Emerald Empress and Superman. I love the way he draws Harley Quinn, as well as definitely Batman, Wonder Woman. I mean, just overall, just quality artwork. And then I am very excited because, I mean, we talked about so far in the Rebirth, a lot of classic villains that we're used to seeing. Black Manta and Aquaman, saw Doomsday in Action Comics. We had a couple of others that just don't come to mind at the moment. But now we get some characters that I'm not really familiar with at all. I don't know much about Emerald Empress, Dr. Polaris, definitely Johnny Sorrow or Rustem. But they look very, very interesting. So we'll see. I am very curious to know who they are, their abilities, and why they are brought together. Not to mention the return of the big burly, the main man Lobo, because they really did Lobo such a disservice in the New 52 when they made him almost like a Hot Topic model, I guess I can call it. So that's interesting, and we talked about this a little bit already. Can Amanda Waller get into some trouble where she's not around for a while? That's what I want, and hopefully that's what we get. But I'm curious because Maxwell Lord, I know that he has more or less the ability to mind control, and when he does that, his nose bleeds. So with him bleeding in that last panel, which one of those villains is he controlling? One or two of them, maybe, if not all of them. I don't know, but the fact that that his nose is bleeding tells me that there's a lot more to this guy right now than meets the eye. So we'll have to wait next week for the next issue. Well, actually, no, that's a lie. I've already read it, but I'm not gonna go on and spoil any of it at all. Definitely in on Justice League versus Suicide Squad. Highly recommend it. Just a real shame that Jason Fabok couldn't do all the issues.
All right, up next we have Superman number 13, written by writers Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, pencils by Doug Mahnke, inks by Jaime Mendoza, Keith Champagne, and Norm Ratman, and colors by Will Quintana. This ends the two-part Frankenstein story arc. It was cool to see Frankenstein show up in the pages of Superman, and his wife shows up as well. It was also cool to see Wonder Woman punch the alien that had been impersonating her friend.
You mean Lois?
Lois, right. Lois, not Superman.
She's so wonderful, but...
Yeah. So, but other than that, this didn't even really feel like a Superman comic at all. It felt much more like a Frankenstein comic where Superman was the guest star because... both the Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein's Monster get the majority of the screen time, and Superman really plays like a backseat. So it was an interesting issue. It was fun. I read the Frankenstein title that came out. He was also saw him in the pages of the New 52 Futures End. Saw him in the pages of Justice League Dark. All that being said, I'm not a huge fan of the character. I probably wouldn't read a title that he starred in, but I thought this was well done here, and it makes me wonder if they are trying to gauge how much interest there is in a return of a Frankenstein title. So I guess time will tell, but it was a solid issue. Not my favorite. Not the best Doug Mahnke art I've seen either. The clean rendering, the great storytelling, the page layouts are all top-notch, as I've come to expect from Mahnke, but just, I don't know, maybe it's because he hasn't drawn Frankenstein before. Just, him and his wife both just looked a little wonky to me. So
yeah.
Other than that, though, it was a fun issue for sure. I just not what I expect from a Superman. I mean, when I pick up a Superman book, I want to read about Superman. You know, I want to read about Lois Lane. I want to read about their son, John Kent. And as I said, this was much more of a Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein issue, which I guess it's okay once in a while kind of breaks it up. It'd be interesting to see where Frankenstein shows up next. What are your thoughts?
It was kind of just seemed like it's a mid arc story to just kind of get us ready for what's coming up next. Well, not even get us ready, just to kind of get us by until we get to the next arc. But like you, it was cool to see Frankenstein when he first appeared in the book a couple issues ago. I was pretty excited. When I saw the Bride of Frankenstein, a little bit more excited, and then it just kind of leveled off there. Not much to the book, although I will say it does follow the theme that Superman books have been following since the beginning of Rebirth. And that's really about family, relationships, and of course, this one day, by the end of it, we see both Frankenstein and his wife just kind of go their separate ways, kind of understanding that they're no good together, no matter how, you know, they maybe want to try it. And then it seems to kind of remind Lois and Clark, Lois and Superman, whichever you want to take, about their family and about how important it is for them to continue to stay close. So in that sense, it was cool because I get it, still following the same theme. It didn't really go too far off the tracks, but I can see that we're kind of getting into the next arc, which is probably going to take a lot longer than two or three issues.
All right, the last book we're going to talk about this episode is Trinity Number 4, written by Francis Manapole, pencils by Emmanuel Lupacino. This was a really interesting book. I should also mention that the inks are by Ray McCarthy and colors by Hi-Fi. So as I was saying, this is a really interesting book. If I have any problem with Trinity so far, it's been the fact that it's not a bi-monthly book, or bi-weekly, rather, but it feels like it is. And by that, I mean, Manny and I have talked in the past about how the pacing seems like it's a little slower overall in the books that come out every other week. So maybe things don't happen quite as fast as they would if it was coming out on a monthly basis, because the writer and artist know that, well, it's only 2 weeks, that people don't have to wait as long. So you're getting two issues a month, so you don't have to put quite as much story. The story doesn't have to advance quite as quickly because it comes out more often. I feel like that's the same thing with Trinity. The story doesn't advance quite as quickly as I would like it to. And that would be okay if it were a book that came out every other week, but it's a monthly book. It's a monthly book that's plotted like a book that has 24 issues a year instead of 12. And so it just feels like, I mean, this is issue 4, and we still don't even really know what exactly is going on with the villain Poison Ivy. There's kind of a clue at the end with who we see at the end of this issue. I don't want to spoil it. And with the most famous story that character was involved in the DC universe, you could see how it could tie in to the villain that apparently is behind the journey that the Trinity is on. But I'm ready to get everything to this point still feels like buildup. We haven't got to don't know the reasons why everything's happening. We don't know what exactly is happening. It seems like the villain in this has been shown in the past to maybe not be 100% bad, to have sometimes reasons that are altruistic. So is it that? Is she being villainous? We just don't know at this point. So I'm ready for the story to just move along a little quicker. That being said, the art in Trinity the entire time, whether it's by Francis Manapole or in this particular issue, Emmanuel Lupacino, has been absolutely gorgeous. This issue is no exception to that. We the heroes go to Paradise Island, Themyscira. Very well done, very well rendered. The Amazons are suitably beautiful. The storytelling is done well. The colors are done well. Seeing the contrast between Wonder Woman and her younger self, Princess Diana, again, that is handled well. So I'm really enjoying the book. I'm just ready for it to kind of pick up the pace. I mean, this is issue 4, and we're still kind of in setup mode. So I'm ready for it to move along. What are your thoughts on Trinity, Manny?
I'm a little behind on Trinity, but I'm going to tell you right now that that is one of the most amazing covers I have seen all year.
Yeah, Clayman cover.
Just
yeah, really, really good.
I mean, Clayman is definitely one of my top artists, but holy cow. It was Batman kind of in the shadows in the background. Wonder Woman obviously is going to be the main focal point for DC for the next few months due to the film coming out. But just the way that the Trinity is laid out is just fantastic. Love the colors. Got those little glare points in Wonder Woman. And obviously, just the way Batman is just in the back, in the shadows, kind of showing the position of each of the members. I will be catching up on it really soon. I did glance through it, and Lou Piccinino's art is amazing. Just really, really gorgeous book. Hopefully by the time I get to number 5, I've caught up, and we kind of learned a little bit more.
All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can find links to Manny's written blog and my written blog there, as well as the famous sketch gallery, links to our YouTube channel where you can watch videos of books we've recorded. Also, be sure you're heading over to LRM Online, where we have our exclusive podcast, The 9-Panel Grid, that comes out every Tuesday, focusing on a wide variety of topics. Don't forget to follow us on social media, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow along. You'll find out when new episodes are coming out. You'll find out convention coverage. It's not going to be too long before the convention season is going to start ramping up again. With
oh god,
for us, the first show of the year is probably going to be Long Beach in February. So be sure and be on the lookout for that. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.